We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Great to be here.
Senator, as we know, you're one of the opponents to same-sex marriage in the state Senate. Your opposition is based on your religious beliefs. There's some scuttlebutt about a possible deal in which the Senate would pass same-sex marriage and the House would approve a labor-backed binding arbitration bill. Do you see that happening?
I have not heard that at all. Just my first reaction is I don't see that the two being connected.
Let's go to Scott.
You know, I'm really interested. You're a lifelong educator, a coach, a teacher. And we have a lot of people in this state who want to set educational priorities from 30,000 feet. You know, they're PhDs and all these folks who have these big studies. And I'm wondering, in your community, which has a lot of underprivileged folks, hardworking but not from wealthy backgrounds, what do you think we can do? What would you do if you were Philosopher King to try to make our schools more receptive to those students who come from more difficult backgrounds?
Well, I think what they're doing now with the educational reforms and the professional development of the teachers, certainly the evaluation of teachers is a big concern right now because a lot of pressure is on the teachers and because who feel that the social conditions of the students aren't being factored in and they're being held accountable for that. But I think the reforms that we have now for standards and proficiency, I think it's a good thing because now the expectations are high for everyone.
Now, you've been a critic of high-stakes testing. Why?
Because they want to use it as the sole criteria for graduation. In the classroom, when you plan a lesson, some people are visual, some are auditory, some are hands-on. And you have to incorporate all three aspects into lesson planning because kids learn different ways.
Now, teaching, is it tougher to teach when they mandate a curriculum? Doesn't it take a lot of freedom away from the teacher to reach the children?
Well, there's a lot of factors. There's class size. Now, with the curriculum being the same, before, attendance was a problem. Because there's some kids, because of their socioeconomic background, that move five times a year.
Yes.
So now if you go from one high school to another and the curriculum's different, now you're really lost. So by having a uniform curriculum, if you move from school to school, at least you'll be in the same ballpark.
Rhode Island has suffered from very high unemployment since the state went into the recession, but the issue of unemployment has been even worse in minority communities like the south side of Providence. What do you think the state Senate can do to help address that?
Well, one of the things was the passing of the educational formula. So certainly we need to make the investment where it's needed. And the other piece is to look at, because I have a very diverse, I go from Washington Park to the east side,
yep,
with South Providence in the middle. So I have a very diverse district. But I would say that the rates of incarceration is a big factor in the unemployment in certain parts of my district, because once you get that jail record, it ends up being a lifetime sentence because you can't get a job.
On a related note, you're backing some legislation meant to try and help offenders become productive citizens after they get out of prison. Tell us about that, and how do you see the outlook for those bills?
About 13 years ago, as a deacon, I'm in the prison ministry, and how I got into it was a young man that I was a former student of mine or someone from the neighborhood. They came up and said, "Hal," they said, "I can't get a job. I serve my time. I have a wife and kids. And if I tell them I have a record, they won't hire me. And if I lie about it and they find out, they fire me. I want to put my past behind me. I want to take care of my family." So anyway, that led to me getting into prison ministry. And so I realized that, where would we be if God didn't forgive us for our sins? And so reconciliation and restoration is a big part of it. And certainly it's more than punishment. And government is more than punishment. We need to have some avenues for restoration for those that truly want to turn their life around.
Do you think the legislation you're supporting to help address this issue will become law this year?
I think so. The only question last year was the tight budget. And I met with the judges, I met with the attorney general, I met with all the parties, community advocates, and the only holdup last year was parole. Probation and parole needed a couple of extra positions, so which meant we have to fund a couple of jobs in order for this program. I think that was the only holdup, but it did pass, but of course with the budgetary considerations, that was the only snafu.
One of the problems we have in inner cities is the very high dropout rates of a lot of minority students, especially. How can we address this better?
Well, I think we can address it better, certainly by some of the reform initiatives. And then you have to have nonprofits, a lot of things that aren't factored in. As we cut funding, a lot of the nonprofits that service the youth are really, their budgets, they're on bare bones budgets. Some are going out of business. So there's a role for the community, because what the schools can't do, the community centers like the Davy Lope Center over my way and, mm-hmm. and the Mount Hope Neighborhood Association and all these different neighborhood programs, the Southeast Asians, they have after school programs is big. And so it's where we put our investment. The old Fram Oil commercial, do you want to change the oil? You want a new engine? Do we want after school programs and summer programs, or do we want to pay for prisons? And that's the bottom line. If we don't do one, we're going to pay for the other.
That's interesting, because a lot of people say that there's been more emphasis in Providence on trying to do after-school programs. You're not seeing that in some neighborhoods?
Well, I'm just saying they need more. They have one program where before it was you have Oasis. I'm trying to think of Washington Park.
Yep.
Neighborhood is, you have the Washington Park Center. You have Oasis International. Mm-hmm. You have the Boys and Girls Club. And as they're funding, they're able to do less. And a lot of things is, even when I go by the library, there's kids there that they're in the library because their parents send them there because they don't want them home alone. They call them the latchkey kids because they're in the library, and the library almost ends up being a service to watch the kids until the parents get home.
Another interesting issue is racial profiling. I know that you personally have had instances where you've been pulled over if you have sweats on and you're driving a legislative plate. Tell us about the real world of being a minority and driving a car in Providence.
Well, it happened to me when I was coaching. I was in the house then, even with my house plates. They probably didn't see the plates, but they pulled me over, and I was dropping my players off. When it gets cold, everybody wants to ride home. And the last time, I think I was about, I'm a grandfather now, but I was about 58 years old, and a cousin of ours had got ordained, and we were at their house, which was a rough part of the neighborhood, for a celebration after the formal church ceremony. And my wife and I were driving down Prairie Avenue, and we got pulled over with the flashlights in our eyes. And then once they realized who I was, they backed off. But it's not nice to be profiled.
The issue of guns and gun-related violence remains very polarizing, even in the aftermath of the terrible tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut last year. Senator, what do you think the state should do to get a better handle in reducing gun-related violence?
Well, I think you certainly want to follow the Constitution, and I know that's big for people that bear arms. But these high-volume magazines and assault weapons that you use in war and background checks, I think those are the areas that, you know, that need to be addressed. And certainly if you're a hunter, what kind of hunter are you with an assault weapon trying to shoot a deer? To me, that's not a challenge. You know, semi-automatic weapons should be good enough.
People in law enforcement say it's very easy to buy an illegal gun on the streets of Providence. How can we as a society get a better handle on in addressing that problem?
Well, they say it's easier, but I think it's still tied to education and giving people hope. If I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and I know, and speaking personally, I came up I grew up on the south side, the west side and the south side of Providence, but I had people encouraging me to get my education. So I knew from my grandparents and my parents, and certainly being a product of the 60s, there were people encouraging and trying to get more people involved to get your education. So in those days, if you graduated from high school, you were lucky, but I had people encouraging me. And there were several programs that, because after the riots, there was a lot of federal money. We had the Boys Club. We had the Recreation Center. We had the Afro Arts Center. We had several things that we could participate in to help keep us off the streets and into trouble, looking at culture and history and if you needed help after school. And I think if we move toward those lines and kids have options, then they'll stay away from the violence. Now, about the video games and what people watch on TV, the parents have a role.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
And State Senator Harold Metz, Democrat of Providence.
Thank you very much for having me.